I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to Luke's massive storytelling podcast thing. Whoa, yeah, here we go. Check it out now. Enjoy.
It's strange. I've always felt like an outsider. It's probably why I was drawn to buying the book in the first place. But there's nothing major that's happened in my life. But I feel like it's been a lot of small things. So like moving home when I was a small kid. Maybe being the youngest child in the family.
You've just named two of the classics, I think. I think there is that physical displacement, geographic displacement, and I think the later borns in the family situation, the youngest sibling, always. I'm convinced of it.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what's made me. I mean, you say you've moved to London. That's why I've ended up as well.
It's the outsider capital of the world, London. Absolutely. Although oddly, when I wrote the book, all the examples were New York, and I think New York was the outsider capital. I've actually written an article. I'm hoping to get into one of the London magazines about this, where actually I think the outsider capital was New York, but I think it's not anymore. I think it is now London. And I'm sure, you know, for Americans out, New York still works, but it's New York's changed. I think it has become too much of an insider's paradise. And I think it's a lot of the geography is a problem, in that you have these islands of Manhattan, and once that fills up with insiders, there's nowhere for the outsiders to go except Brooklyn, which is physically distant, whereas London doesn't have that problem. It can go out to Dalston and New Cross, and do you see what I mean? So London, it will move out as the rich move in, but so what? You know, that's how gentrification works, you know. So eventually, you know, the outsiders will end up in, you know, Canning Town and Walthamstow and wherever.
It's weird that you say that. I mean, Canning Town at the minute. That's exactly where I am.
That's, you know, it's where you belong.
Yeah. My girlfriend asked me why I like living in London, and I told her it's because I like to be anonymous. I like to just walk around and know that no one probably knows who I am.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think that was, you know, that was always New York's joy as well. And I think that's right. There's only a handful of cities like that where you really can be anonymous. I did. I might send you this article because I wrote about it, saying that I was worried about London being the outsider capital, in that I called it that London was suffering almost from the sort of outsiderization of the world of London, in that you were almost it was almost so celebrated that you could be diverse and, you know, an individualist and artistic, and, you know, it was always so celebrated that it could become a cliche. You know, I said, if the idea of sitting in a cafe and feeling moody and writing poetry, but the guy next to you's got his own poetry group started, and, you know, do you see what I mean? And, you know, and he's got his meetup groups, but, you know, and he's just thinking, oh no, it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, I remember sitting in a cafe in Soho, and I got my notebook out and started to write some stories or whatever. And I looked to my right and I saw someone writing a screenplay. This isn't right.
It's not right. No, exactly that. No, I agree. You know, how can you be a lonely loser when, you know, or there's so many lonely losers in there writing scripts and things? You know? And that, you know, I think that is, there is, that's the issue, that you might end up, it becomes a bit of a cliche, you know, in the end.
So why do you think it is that outsiders are drawn to creative arts or writing or poetry or anything like that?
Well, I think there's several reasons. One is I think they want to express themselves, and I think they do. An outsidership feeling is that they are keen to express how they feel. You know, it could well be that they're, you know, they've got the psychological issues that force them to think that they are on the edge. Often it is self-esteem issues and things like that that make them inward looking, and so they want to be able to express themselves. I think that's certainly one. I think another is that once you are on the outside looking in, it gives you a different perspective. And so I think I am a creative person, but I didn't necessarily count myself as a creative person. It was the people, other people would say I was, that, you know, I'd be good at coming up with ideas and things because I saw things very differently. And it was simply because I had that kind of, you know, that perspective of someone looking at it. I described it as, you know, you were watching a play. You weren't one of the actors, but you were watching the play. And so it gave you a different perspective on it.
Just going back to what you said before, I think it's really interesting, and I think a lot of people who listen to the show are going to be writers and screenwriters and that sort of thing. The idea of that's the best way for them to communicate how they're feeling. So, I mean, I honestly think that the only way for me to explain exactly the way I feel about something is by putting it into a piece of writing, and then someone else reading that writing, and hopefully they'll understand. I mean, there's no way to guarantee they will, but that's probably the only reason I write.
But also, really, I agree, and I mean, what, you know, I'm not brilliant verbally, you know, as you can probably tell, and
you're better
and
than
I think
me.
That that's one of the, well, whatever. But I'm not, you know, I one of the issues I think that, you know, look, people always expect writers to be brilliant verbally. And I think the opposite is true, in that we often express ourselves in writing because we struggle to express ourselves verbally. We're not brilliant at that. And I probably is the same with, you know, as you say, screenwriters, certainly with artists. It's a way of expressing themselves that is a way of, because they can't do it verbally. So I think that there's certainly something in that, that it's a desire to express it, but also an inability to express it verbally, you know. And I think that might well be an important feature of why outsiders are creative and innovative. And it's also a danger, because I want to get onto this sort of entrepreneurialism thing, and I think because it is one of the issues. I think, you know, for me, and the book recommends that entrepreneurialism in whatever form, it's a very broad term. I'm not saying start a business, but entrepreneurialism means, you know, doing things for yourself on your own account, if you like. And I think that's a brilliant way forward for an outsider. But one of the dangers, one of the reasons I think it's a brilliant way forward is it forces you not to look inward. If you're entrepreneurial, that means you have to have a customer, you have to have an object, someone has to buy into, invest whatever your output is. And I think that's important. Because I think outsiders can withdraw into themselves. And, you know, I think that it's very easy for an outsider to become a sort of fantasist or you know, or someone that just completely withdraws, and you know, sort of Billy Liar type character and sort of thing. And I've got there's certainly aspects of that in me, and I think entrepreneurialism is a very good way of overcoming that.
Is this when you were talking about Me Inc. as well?
Yes, I think Me Inc.'s I think very important aspect, where it's a way of depersonalizing your pursuits, because obviously we talked about setbacks. Yeah. Earlier, and how they can floor you, and I think that depersonalization is therefore very important in that. And that if you create Me Inc., that is a company that whatever you do, whatever your entrepreneurialism is, and I would hope it would be something that has some creativity to it, because that's obviously probably as an outsider where you're best. You know, whatever it is, Me Inc. says it's the company that is moving forward, and that company will pitch for things and lose. It will pitch for things and win, but it will pitch for things and lose. It will. Not everyone is going to like what that product is. What happens is, if you're a person, especially a sort of outsider, might be a bit sensitive, low confidence, self-esteem issues, is that rejection, you only need one rejection and you're flawed. You're completely back to square one. Whereas if you are Me Inc., then, you know, you've just lost the pitch. You just need to get to the next pitch. You might have to learn stuff. You might have to hone the pitch a bit, but you move forward. And so it's just a way of depersonalizing it.
I think removing yourself, like just that one step, is enough to, I mean, as many times in the past when I first started trying to do stuff, and it's very similar to yourself, I guess, like, if someone said they weren't happy about or they didn't like something that I'd done, I wouldn't do it anymore.
No, exactly. You were flawed. That was it. It was all over. Absolutely. And, I think this, one of the reasons I, and that's hence going to Mini Inc., for instance, the first time I did a speech on any of this stuff was actually at a School of Life event. And there was one person in the audience that clearly didn't rate me or didn't, you know, thought I shouldn't have been there or whatever, and didn't say anything, but just made it clear to me through body language, etc., that they thought, you know, I wasn't up to it. And when I think about that event now, that's the only thing I think of, is that one person. And for me, no matter how many people came up to me afterwards saying, oh, you know, I think that was excellent, thank you, really liked it, etc., etc., means nothing. I have completely dismissed all that. And the only thing I focus on is this one person that didn't even say anything, just, you know, looked as if they, you know, that, you know, I filled in the blanks and assumed they thought me an idiot here. And actually, and so Mini Inc. is there to deal with that, to say, no, you know, what you've got to do is move forward. The only thing that matters is actually there was one person there that was from Psychologist magazine. Now I need to focus on them because I might then get an article going, you know, and that's all that matters. That's what Mini Inc. does, is say, that's the goal. What's the next step? You know, okay, that person didn't like it. Well, forget it, because I've got these two, three other people lined up that, you know, said they did like it, and I might be able to get, you know, an article here or another speech there or whatever. And, but it takes depersonalization to be able to do that.
Do you find that yourself, are you sort of getting over that sort of, now you're using this sort of Me Ink technique?
Yeah, of course. Yes. It's still...
it's the monkey on your shoulder, right?
Yeah, the monkey on your shoulder. It's not going away, you know. And, you know, it's still very aggravating. I find it, you know, I do find it very annoying, especially with talks. There's always, you know, when there's that sort of one sort of clever dick in the audience. And, you know, I do find that upsetting. You know, if I get a bad review on Amazon, you know, I find it upsetting. You know, if I write an article and there's a dodgy comment underneath, it upsets me. I have learned that what it doesn't do now is floor me. It upsets me. It triggers the same old reactions that I've always had, but it doesn't stop me making the next move, because the next move has been planned. It's strong. It's, you know, it's just where I just need to keep going. And I think the planning is, you know, a very good aspect of this. And I think that, again, creative outsiders, et cetera, all that thing about procrastination I'm talking about, again, it's a weak area for us. And that's where you need things. That's what you need to overcome, is the fact that you're almost waiting for a miracle as an outsider. You're waiting for somebody to go, you know what? I think, you know, I've spotted you. I can see that you're beautifully talented. You know, I'm going to give you everything you want. And of course, you know, and so you're waiting to be rescued. And actually, no one's going to come and rescue you. You've got to sort this out yourself. No one's coming to rescue you. And in fact, if they are coming to rescue you, you should be highly suspicious. If somebody comes and says to you, oh, you're just what I'm looking for, you know, come and join my gang, you should be highly suspicious, because they are somebody that has probably spotted your weaknesses and sees you as a recruit to help them achieve their goals. So I'd be highly suspicious of any rescuer now. And that, you know, and again, that is, you know, whereas I spent my entire 20s waiting for somebody to rescue me.
So interesting. It rings so true for a lot of my life. Well, I don't know. Just that idea of I'm going to enter a competition and then that's it.
That's it.
Yeah, be fine after that.
Yeah, that's it. My world will change. No, exactly that. I mean, I had that with my first book. I had a book, you know, I lived in New York for 2 years. Had a book out, you know, it seemed to do all right. And it didn't take me, I thought that was it. Everyone would answer the phone to me and my life would be, people would be beating a path to my door. And, you know, because that didn't happen, I sort of collapsed, you know, and it was a big lesson that.
The Robert Kelsey interview, to be continued in part 4.
even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.